Welcome to the NorCal Real Estate Show, where we're talking all things real estate in Yolo, Sacramento, and Solano counties. I'm Jeremy Higgins. I'm with the Higgins team at eXp Realty, sitting here with the one and only Andrew Lujewski. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing fantastic.
Right on. So we're sitting here in the Darling New Media Studios. Nate Darling is also in here. How you doing, Nate?
I'm doing great, guys. It's get the mouse over here so you can see me. Hey.
Hey, Nate.
How's it going? Just taking care of a little business out here in the outer offices while the podcast goes on. So I hope we don't get too much extraneous noise from the other members of the team here.
We feel your pain. Like I said, I'm three deep, three children. So I know what you're dealing with there. So we're in what? Studio A, is that right?
Correct.
This thing is it's all pimped out. It's looking cool. Feeling very official right now. So, how you doing, Andrew?
Doing fantastic.
Do anything exciting this weekend?
Went to the lake. Enjoyed the warm weather. Got a little sunburnt. But
you in that lake, was it Berryessa again?
It was Berryessa again.
Nice.
But we have a little cool spell right now. We're in the mid-70s today. I'm enjoying the break from the heat.
Nice, nice. Well, as you can expect, I spent a little time on the golf course against this weekend, and we won't talk about how I played, but I did have a great time.
That's all that matters.
Yeah. So today we are going to talk about pre-listing inspections. Are they worth it? Should you do it? We're also going to have a quick tip of the day, give you our 2 cents on something cool, and then we're going to talk about what's a segment that we wanted to bring. We're going to call it what?
Story time.
Story time. So we're going to have a story time segment, and then we're going to have a little fun favorite listing of the week, a little contest. We'll go into that.
A little guessing game.
Yeah. So why don't we start off with the quick 2 cents of the day. What do you got?
So 2 cents of the day is going to be vacant home insurance. If you ever find yourself in this situation where you have a death in the family, say your family member lived in California, they pass away, you're located in Texas, the house is going to sit vacant for a while. You know, you got to coordinate your move to California to schedule everything to get the house cleaned out. And when a house is vacant, bad things can happen. It's more liability. Pipes can break. There's no one there to stop a leak.
Vandalism,
whatever else. So what you want to do is get vacant home insurance. Most primary insurance companies will not offer it because of the liability, a lot more liability. So you have to search around and find a company that is willing to insure a vacant home.
And I wish we could give you some more direction on who to go to and that kind of stuff. But as it's one of those things that you really do have to search around. It may not be cheap, but critically important. And we're going to have some stories that will just kind of accent how important it is. But it's a very common thing that we run into. And I think very few people even know that vacant home insurance is required. I would say that from my experience in speaking with insurance agents and that kind of stuff, if the home's going to be vacant for more than 45 days, then you should strongly consider this.
Correct.
They could void your insurance policy if they discover that it was vacant more than 45 days. Yeah.
Well, our experience is, you know, insurance companies will try to find any way out, you know, to not pay out on a situation. They'll send out an investigator and do that whole deal. So, our advice is better safe than sorry. Get vacant home insurance.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they'll send insurance agents out to do the investigation, that kind of stuff. So if you were on a prolonged vacation, you know, maybe you could squeak it. But, you know, if mom passed away in January and this devastating loss happens in May and you live in Texas, I think we could potentially have a problem. And that's going to lead us right into story time. So I've got some stories. These stories are meant to be a little bit entertaining. Sometimes maybe a little unfortunate, though.
Well, I have a similar situation as you, but let's hear yours because yours is a little more personable, a little more close to home for you.
Yeah, I got a couple, actually.
Uh-oh.
So we're going to talk water damage today. So just an example of this vacant home insurance. This is kind of what inspired us to have the vacant home two cent tip of the day being about the insurance. So I was sitting at home one day and I just hear from my bathroom, I just hear this whoosh, and I'm like, what the hell is that? So I go running in there and I discover that the guts of the interior of my toilet snapped off at the very base of the tank. And so there's no, you know, water regulation at that point. So the water's just shooting up. It's hitting the top of the tank and it's pouring out all over the floor. So I got there within seconds, really, because I heard it pretty quickly. So I jump in there and I turn the water off and, you know, all's good. However, I had a family member, friend, around the same time, who happened to be on vacation, and literally the same thing happened. And the toilet just starts pouring water all over the house. They don't get back for a week. It's been flooding for a week. And they literally had mold going up more than 5 feet around up the walls around the entire house. It was catastrophic. So these stories, again, meant to be a little bit entertaining, but oftentimes unfortunate. I was fortunate. She was not so fortunate. But again, I cannot stress enough about having that insurance on your house.
Definitely.
What do you got?
Similar situation. We had a house for sale on the market. It's on the market maybe 5 days or so. Vacant home. So, you know, buyer shows up with their agent. They show the house. I get the little notification and they leave. No big deal, right? Well, the owner happened to stop by to grab something out of the garage 2 days later. And when she pulled up to the house, there was water flooding out of the front door and down the front steps, down the street. It had been flooding for 2 days.
No bueno.
Not good. And the water inlet for the toilet in the downstairs bathroom randomly broke off. We have no idea how. This house is only 5 years old. But that just goes to say that anything can happen, right? End of the day, it took about 6 months to get the mold remediation done and the water damage corrected, and it was almost $200,000. This is a 3,500 square foot, newer style Victorian home. And the whole downstairs is completely just totaled.
That's crazy. It's interesting. Toilets seem to be the common denominator.
The theme of the day, yeah.
So I think that would, my father-in-law is a plumber. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he does every time he leaves his house for a vacation or something like that is turn the water main off to the house. And I don't know. I think that might not be a bad idea.
Hearing the stories, yeah. I mean, it's just a little knob, right? You never want to touch the actual city main out the street, but the little knob out by your water spigot on your house, just turn it off, and that's actually really good advice.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if the plumber does it, you should do it, right?
That is a crazy amount of damage that can happen out of nothing. There are people in different parts of the country that are going $200,000 damage. I paid $130,000 for my house.
Yeah. Well, when you get into mold, Nate, I mean, it can be really bad. I mean, mold is one of those things that over the years has become more common, and people, I think, are getting more accustomed to it and maybe less fearful of it. But at the end of the day, there are some people, it's an allergen. So there are some people that are certainly allergic to it, and you just don't want to take your chances with it. So when we have a whole entire house, you're pulling the sheetrock off the entire house, you're having to treat all of the wood members behind it. If that water was there for, you know, a week or more, you may have some of the 2x4s and the framing on the inside of the walls that have been affected and have to be replaced. I mean, it can get really out of control really quickly.
Yeah. In this particular case, the price was significantly higher than most houses because, one, it's a custom Victorian, lots of crown molding, custom baseboards. The tiling was all custom hand-laid tile, and it was just incredibly expensive to replace.
It's like getting into a wreck in a Ferrari versus a Honda Accord, I guess, sometimes.
Exactly.
So The topic that I wanted to talk about today, that we're going to talk about today, are what we're calling the core five seller inspections. So a lot, the story that you just told, that you just heard there, you know, some of those things may have been able to been discovered during a home inspection. Sometimes they don't, though. I mean, like my situation, like no inspection would have discovered that. That's just the risk of owning a home at the end of the day.
Right.
Nonetheless, as a buyer, I think it's important that all buyers have some confidence moving into the house, that the house isn't going to be in whatever condition it is, but they should know. They should know what their risks are going to be and that kind of stuff. So this topic is really going to be about the sellers ordering these inspections. But I think it's important for us to discuss some of these core five ahead of time to give the listeners an opportunity to understand what we're talking about. And then we'll roll into why we think sellers should get these inspections in advance. So,
right. So, those core five inspections, yeah. Number one is going to be a home inspection.
No doubt.
That's just going to touch on all the different areas of a house, electrical, plumbing, roof, heating and air. And then you have your specific four inspections, which are going to be heating and air, your roof inspection, sewer inspection, and, what's my last one? Pest inspection.
There you go. Pest inspection. So, can you go a little more in depth into the home inspection?
Home inspection, you're going to have, you know, you bring out a home inspector. You're going to hire a home inspector. And they're just going to check the general, you know, is everything working in the house? Are your lights working? Electrical working? You go into the bathroom, is your fan going to turn on? Is your heater turning on when you want the heater to turn on? Is it blowing hot air? If it happens to be raining outside, is your roof leaking? If it's summer, do we have, you know, evidence of a roof leak, you know, moisture or water damage on your ceiling? And it's a very broad inspection, right? Very surface level inspection.
Yeah, I mean, they're called general home inspections for the most part, right? So they're very generalized inspections. So they're going to be a more holistic view. There's my experience with home inspections is that they're going to check out the whole house, otherwise known as a whole house inspection as well. However, they're going to refer to experts in many areas. So if they see a few deficiencies in the roof area, rather than giving you an in-depth explanation of the deficiencies, they're going to say, hey, we've noticed some deficiencies. We recommend that you get a roof inspection. Same with pest and that kind of stuff. The advantage of a general home inspection, in my opinion, however, is that they tend to be a little bit more independent and less conflict of interest, if you know what I mean, when it comes to their inspections. So home inspections by law, at least in California, are not allowed to bid out any of the work associated with their findings. They're not allowed to do the work, get paid for that work. They're not allowed to refer you to anybody to do the work. So basically, they don't have a dog in that fight, and they're not there to make any money. They're there to give you an unbiased opinion of what the home is. So I think that's really, really important, because when you get into these specialized inspections, although the folks that we use, we trust wholeheartedly, there's no doubt that there could be maybe it's just a perception of a conflict, and the general home inspection will help ease your mind in that regard. Mm-hmm. The home inspector saying that there's dry rot in a certain area, when the pest inspector comes back and says the same thing, you're going to feel a little bit more comfortable with it.
Right. And I think the home inspections too are a little more user friendly. The inspector will walk around the house with you and show you how everything works, which can be really comforting to a home buyer. And, you know, you get like a mold report done and you look at a report, you have no idea what any of the numbers or what anything means. So home inspection, super handy.
Yeah.
So I have a quick question, guys. Yeah. You mentioned people being a little distrustful of some of the more specific inspections, but that the home inspection is a great way to kind of get to know what's going on. And because of the law, they don't have a dog in the fight. How often do you run into that with buyers and sellers where they are just really opposed or have some sort of issue with the inspectors because they think it's just another way for someone to get money out of you.
Yeah, we have to differentiate between a buyer's perspective and a seller's perspective in that situation. So a seller, in my experience, tends to lean towards the, I don't want to believe these inspection reports because that's obviously potentially going to cost them money in the repair, whereas the buyers may be a little bit more trusting. So if you get two estimates, for instance, the buyer's generally going to want to go with the higher estimate and the seller's naturally going to want to go with the lower estimate. That's my opinion. The other nice thing about the home inspection is going to Andrew's point about it being user-friendly is they give you the report, but they also give you almost like a homeowner's manual. Mm-hmm. So what I think a lot of folks may not consider when they're owning a home is that a home is a living, breathing thing. It does require maintenance, just like a car would. I mean, we have to change out our oil. We have to change tires, brakes, and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't mean that the car is defective. It's just part of the maintenance. Well, a house needs the same thing. I mean, there's going to be cracked tiles that happen. It doesn't mean that you have a defective roof. There's going to be dry rot that happens. It doesn't mean that you have defective wood siding on your house. So the homeowner or the home inspection will provide you a manual that will kind of remind you about all those things and give you some really good information about how to maintain a house during the ownership of it. So I think that's also really important. And then lastly, the home inspector will generally walk you through the home and they're going to show you some of the really important things to you. Like, hey, in the case of an emergency, water emergency, this is where your water main is. Mm-hmm. And this is how you'd shut it off. In the case of a fire, this is where your electrical panel is. And this is where your main electrical shutoff is, that kind of stuff. So that's always really nice. And then there's always some little weird thing in a house. And you're like, what is that? Home inspector are like, oh yeah, that's this. You're like, oh, you always learn something. So home inspector, it's inspection, like we said, generalized inspection. And oftentimes they're going to refer you to some more specialized inspections. So roof inspection is one of those specialized inspections. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah. So back to the home inspection really quick. It's almost like an added layer of protection, right? It's like a general overview of the house is going to touch on, you know, the overall or general condition of the roof, right? And then you can go in and get a specialized roof inspection where you have a roofer contractor go up there and he's going to take in-depth photos. He's going to give you the estimated age of the roof, look for any deficiencies. And, you know, you can compare that to the home inspection and generally they're going to be really close. You know, we don't see too often where we have a big gap in opinion on like a roof or something. So roof is pretty straightforward.
I agree. The nice thing about the roof inspection by a specialist, however, is that you do get the dollar figure of what the repairs are.
Correct.
Which is certainly nice.
And you can also get actually a roof warranty. Yeah. They give you a report and they say, hey, if you fix, you know, these areas and do some patches here or fix a cracked tile, we'll actually warranty this roof for 2 years for say $200, which can be really handy. But the next inspection, pest inspection, not so straightforward. What's your experience with
that? Yeah, pest inspections are a little bit more in-depth. They're very important, very important. They're going to be covering, obviously, pests, termites, that kind of stuff. And I would say the bulk of them are really related to the dry rot around the house. So dry rot is technically a living organism, fungus, and that's why it falls under pest. And wood and water don't get along very well. And the byproduct is this dry rot fungus that starts to eat away at the wood. And eventually it can start to eat away into the framing of the house, any, some of the structural components of the house, and it can cause a big problem. Termites also can be very significant, and they're not easy to spot to the layman person.
Well, there's two different types, right?
Yeah, there's the subterranean and then there's the drywood. I don't even know what a drywood is. I know that they fly around. They can be found in attics and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Those are the types of termites that when you do discover them, if you ever drive around a neighborhood and you see a house that has a tent all over the entire house, that's a dry wood termite situation going on there. Pretty rare in our area. I think I've seen two or three tented houses in my career. And I can't even say I was involved in those transactions, but I just remember seeing them. You know, you walk down a street and mm-hmm. like, what the heck? It looks like the circus is going on. You got this big tent yeah. around a house. So not very common, but,
well, we have subterranean, right?
It's yeah. Subterranean is really what we're looking for. I shouldn't say what we're really looking for. We're looking for both, but subterranean are the most common. Those things burrow themselves into the dirt, 10 to 12 inches down into the ground. And then they like to crawl up and start getting up into the wood. And, I had an escrow, actually we're still in escrow on it right now, where the pest inspector called out termites in both garages. And I went back in after seeing that finding and I couldn't find the termites. So they were there because we had two different pest inspectors that called them out. So I have no question that they were there. But I'm just giving that as an example.
Well, that's why you hire an expert,
right? It is to see them. I mean, I knew they were there and I couldn't find them. So, pest damage, if it goes unmanaged, can be into the tens of thousands of dollars.
Even more than that, actually. There was a house in East Sacramento a few weeks ago, and they said the entire house needed to be lifted up, and they needed to redo the entire foundation because of termites. Completely rotted away, eaten away.
Brutal.
And they said it could be like $200,000 to do that.
Could you imagine? So pest inspection, pretty important. Would you agree?
Very important.
Yeah, probably one of the
I don't want to prioritize the inspections here, but that's got to be towards the top
yeah.
in terms of importance.
I mean, I don't want to go off on too many tangents, but I think all these inspections cost money. I think these core five that we're talking about on average would cost about $1,200 total. And so it's not uncommon for people to start to start kind of like figuring out if there's any that they can do away with to save money. Not a big fan of that, but it is what it is. Some folks want to do that. And I would say that the termite inspection is probably one that you don't want to skip on. I think it's about
it's also
bucks.
The cheapest one too.
Yeah, it's like for the most part. Bucks. It's not a big deal. So, so we have roof, pest, home, heating and air.
Very important. So your general home inspector is going to come in and just make sure that your heater and your air conditioning is working. Is your heater blowing out hot air? And is your air conditioning blowing out cold air? When you bring out an HVAC technician, they're going to go much more in depth. They're going to give you a temperature differential. Where is the temperature coming in the intake? And how much colder is it coming out of the vents? For like your air conditioner, for example. And they'll go through and they'll look at your heating or your condenser unit outside, the little unit outside by your house. And they're going to check bearings, make sure everything's operating properly, make sure that the wiring is correct, make sure nothing's burnt, which is really common, especially in the summer months when it gets really hot. They'll check your heater, your furnace, make sure the condenser coil is all in good shape, make sure your drain lines are draining properly because your heating and air system does create condensation, right? You don't want to back up and, cause a little flood or a leak. And, they'll give you an entire layout or report, and extremely important.
You want another little story time about the condenser?
Tell me.
Very first house that I sold, West Sacramento. My client, this was 15, 16 years ago. My client was a police officer mm-hmm. and worked graveyard shift. The house was just over 2 years old. He purchases it from the seller was the original owner, purchases it and moves in. And his very first night of staying there, he works all night, comes home in the morning and goes to bed. And around 12:30, I get this frantic phone call from him with some unpleasant language. And he's like, my ceiling has fallen to the ground. My ceiling's fallen to the ground. I'm like, what the? And so it turns out that the air conditioning system, the primary was never hooked up by the builder, and the original owners had never used the system in 2 years. They never used the air conditioning. I think they were sadistic or something. I don't know. but they never used the air conditioning system. So it was never connected. And then, so because it was not connected, the water was pouring into the pan, and then the pan goes through what we call a secondary drain. It's like mm-hmm. a backup, but the pan had a hole in it because when they put the construction, when the construction workers put it in, they punctured a hole into it. So he just turns his air conditioner on, and that was enough condensation that the entire hallway and one of the bathrooms and half of his master bedroom ceiling fell to the ground with soaked insulation. Pretty crazy stuff. So like all of these things, like they're easy fixes. Like secondaries, primaries, they back up all the time, and they're literally just like flush it out. You know, it's not a big deal. But anyway, didn't mean to go on a little tangent there.
Seriously though, guys, $1,200 is a bargain compared to dealing with any of those things.
No doubt.
Especially if you're a buyer. Like I've just spent all this money on my house, and oh my God, my ceiling fell in. Now what?
It's legit, dude. We wouldn't be talking about these if we didn't think they were important. I mean, this stuff is legit. And we were talking about this. I keep going on these damn tangents. I'm sorry, but like sometimes I get a little bit passionate about this stuff. We were talking about in this situation where we're in a market where it's so competitive right now, and there's 10 or 15 offers that a lot of these people are offering, you know, to purchase the house as is with no repairs and all that kind of stuff. And I don't want to get into that too much. That's our next episode. My point being here is that they're being advised by people sometimes that since you can't ask for repairs, there's no point in getting the inspections. Totally disagree with that, folks. Totally disagree with that. You may not be able to ask for repairs because of the way you chose to negotiate your deal, but it doesn't mean that you don't want to know that you're about ready to have a catastrophic event happen in the house. It just seems silly to me. So anyway, I don't want to stay on that tangent a little bit any longer, but I want to go to the next one, which is the sewer inspection.
Sewer inspection. Yeah.
Cause that can really create some problems too.
Back to your general home inspector.
Oh gosh. Back to general.
They're going to come in. They're going to turn the water on in your kitchen. Make sure your sink's draining. They're going to go to the bathroom, flush the toilet, make sure your toilets are flushing. But when you bring in a sewer inspector, they're going to go find that little clean out outside of your house, and they're going to stick a camera down there, and they're going to look at the plumbing going up to the house, and they're going to look at the plumbing going away from the house. And they're going to be able to see everything that's going on in there. And more often than not, we're going to find roots in there. We're going to find collapsed sewer pipes. And although the water is finding its way out to the sewer in the street, over time, you're going to end up with blockages. Or in my case, I found almost a full tree branch growing up in my sewer pipe.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with sewers.
So it's cheap inspection. I think it's like $200. They will send you the entire video. You can watch it yourself. And you can decide.
Do you really want to watch that?
Oh, I did. It was like a full 20-minute inspection. I was watching every minute of it.
Dude, you are nasty, bro.
Like, wait, I had that for lunch two weeks ago. I remember that. Just kidding.
So $150 to $200 inspection. There's really no way to inspect a sewer other than if there was already a catastrophic blockage or something like that. But there's no way to inspect a sewer and know the condition of it without a camera.
Right.
And we've talked about roofs failing and coming down because of water. We've talked about termites eating up houses. We've talked about roof problems. We've talked about mold issues. What happens if a sewer backs up?
Well, you're going to have a shitty situation on your hands. But back to what we were talking about earlier, your house is going to flood. That happened to me.
It's going to flood with crap.
Yeah.
Poop.
Yep.
Nasty.
It happened to me, except I was doing laundry.
And then
when
you
I
have a hazmat
home.
Situation going on.
Yeah. I was doing laundry. I wasn't home. And it backed up all the way into my back bathroom bathtub and went that way and flooded.
Oh, that's disgusting. Do you take baths in there anymore?
I don't fit in a bathtub. So it's probably an incentive just to get rid of the bathtub altogether.
So we covered all of them, right?
Yes, that's all of them. Those are the core five. You can always add more.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, if your house has a fireplace, you can get a chimney inspection. You feel that the house may have some structural integrity issues, you can bring out a structural engineer and they can look at your foundation, make sure the house isn't sloping, all that good stuff. You can find an inspector for anything, mold. You can get a driveway concrete inspector, I'm sure, if you
look at formaldehyde, in case you're storing dead bodies, previous people storing dead bodies in the house, something like that.
You could find anything.
Might be some formaldehyde, yeah, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you bring up a great point. This is just the core five. And these are the most common inspections that folks get when they're purchasing a home. I think if you were to get these core five, amongst these five, they would do a pretty good job of discovering any other potential issues. So if you had a mold issue, one of these five inspectors would say, hey, you've got something going on here.
They're going to note something, and then you can bring in an additional expert.
Structural engineer. One of these people are going to say something that's going to, and they're going to recommend that you get a structural engineer to come out and look at the house, that kind of stuff. So the core five are great, and then you can go beyond that. So the real topic of this inspection or in the, this podcast is sellers getting these inspections, right? So in our area, in the Sacramento, Solano, and Yolo areas, it's most common that the sellers obtain or the buyers obtain these inspections. So the seller will put their house on the market. They'll receive their offers. They'll negotiate price and terms with the buyer. And then they get into escrow. And then once they're in escrow, there's a due diligence period. That's a time that allows a buyer to go in and do these types of inspections. And if they find something that they don't like, they can always back out of the deal, right? So it's called the due diligence period. So what we're recommending is that sellers do that in advance. This is something that they use in the San Francisco Bay Area a lot. So this is something that Andrew and I and our team have been using for, I don't know, probably a good 4 years now. And originally when we started using this, we were doing it to try to keep deals into escrow. Because I would say that most deals fall out of escrow in this day and age as a result of some sort of condition to the house. So a buyer gets into contract, they do their inspections, they discover something, seller doesn't want to fix it, the buyer bails. Often, and we can go way deep into the weeds in this, and we're not going to do that today, but you know, buyers, they get a little nervous at times, right? And certain things pop up and they freak out. We had one recently, rodents were discovered in the house. Those can be remediated, but what happened?
Well, we are representing the buyers on this, in this particular case, and the seller did not get any inspections done up front, and they did not do any disclosures up front. So we go in blind. We get in a contract, get the accepted offer, and we had lined up our inspections. And I think probably 2 days in, we get the disclosures on the property. And the sellers had noted that there was a rodent problem in the attic a couple years prior. But they had it remediated, cleaned out, and they had like rodent extermination service, you know, every couple months since then. And the buyer saw that, and it was an absolute deal breaker for him.
Yeah, there was
no getting past it.
Yeah, it was a phobia,
huge phobia.
There's certain things like we are real estate agents, we're psychologists, therapists, we're a lot, but we're kind of like the home inspector where we're generalized, and when we get into a phobia like that. That was beyond our capabilities.
Right. And, you know, naturally the buyer's back out of the deal. Nothing we can do there. We're not going to force anyone. We provided them the information. They made their decision. That's fine. But if we were representing the sellers in that situation, we would have had all those inspections done up front. We would have already had our disclosures done up front. A potential buyer coming in would have already seen that, and they could have made their decision before even submitting an offer, if they wanted to move forward on the house.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, that wasted, I mean, I hate using the term wasted time. I mean, that's what everybody says, I don't want to waste your time or, you know, are you going to waste my time or not, whatnot. But it's more than just time, right? It's we've got somebody's hopes up and that they were going to buy a house and we broke their heart. They didn't get the house that they wanted. A seller has to go back onto the market. That, in my opinion, it's like getting a black eye, right? The whole world is out there going, what happened? Why did this house come back on the market? What's wrong with the house? And the reality is that these are incredibly emotional purchases that happen. And when you have a multiple offer situation and there's multiple people vying for this house, that actually that increases that whole, if somebody else wants this house, then it must be a great house, right? If other people want it, then I want it. Well, when you come back onto the market and you get that big red B on the MLS that says back on the market, then that's telling the world that somebody decided they didn't like it after they had a chance to go in there and take a look at it a little bit further. And so it takes so in our experience, when houses go back on the market, you just don't get that same rush of people coming back in. And therefore, you know, without that rush of people, you're not going to be able to get the multiple offers that you want. And without the multiple offers, you're not going to be able to negotiate the highest possible price, you know, what it are. Right. So, we're going to go back to getting the sellers to get these up front. So originally we did it purely to try to save the deal, right? Like if we figured if we presented these findings to the buyer in advance, we could negotiate in a transparent fashion with the buyer. We can determine, you know, whether or not they want the seller to fix it or whatnot. And it would be all fine and dandy. And that was great. That worked. There was an unintended benefit that happened, however, and that was in the form of negotiations. So what we didn't realize at the time when we first started using this was that we were going to run into situations where buyers would see these inspections and these findings, and then they would say, not only am I going to give you this price, but I'm also going to take these repairs off your shoulders. And I'm not going to request you, the seller, to make these repairs. So there was an example, you remember that story that I tell oftentimes at the listing table, you've probably heard it a million times, but it's a great story. So I want to tell it. Can I tell it?
Go for it.
All right. So we were in contract. We listed a house in Davis on 7th Street, and it was a nice 600,000-ish house or whatnot. The seller does all these inspections up front, and discover that the roof is shot, needs to be replaced. Come down with an estimate, $16,000 to replace the roof. Not the end of the world, but $16,000 is a big chunk of change, right? So we get our offer, and they offer full price, but they want the seller to replace the roof.
Fair.
I agree. I think a buyer has a reasonable expectation that the roof's going to be in good operating order, right? Condition. Fortunately for us, however, offer number two comes in the next day. Offer number two knows that offer number one's there. So they come in and they say, hey, we're going to pay you your full price, plus we're going to take the roof. We'll replace the roof ourselves. We're not going to ask you, the seller, to replace the roof. So would you agree that the seller just earned an extra $16,000?
That's $16,000 in their pocket, less effort, less stress.
100%.
Not a deal breaker.
No joke. Same week, we're representing a buyer. So keep in mind, us real estate agents, we have different strategies for buyers and sellers, right? So for a seller, we're working to get them the best possible price and do the least amount of repairs. For a buyer, we have to switch gears and we become tigers looking to get the lowest possible price for a house and get the seller to do the maximum number of repairs.
Everything under the moon fixed.
100%. So we're in a super competitive situation. We have six other buyers. So there's seven buyers total that go into this house. And we're fortunate enough, our buyer gets the house. Seller had not done any inspections on this house. So you know where this is going. So we're in escrow. Those six buyers, see you later, they're gone. They're off into the wind. They're looking for other houses, right? We're no longer in competition with those buyers. Our buyer does the inspections, and what do you think happened?
Found out that the house needs a roof.
House needed a roof. What are the chances? Same week, two different houses that need roofs. So because those six buyers are now gone, and our buyer's no longer competing.
We got the leverage.
Of course we told them you should request that the seller replace the roof. And what do you think the seller chose to do in that case?
Well, they had no leverage. They wanted to keep the deal together.
So what'd they do?
Replace the roof.
Damn straight they did. So, folks, I believe that there's leverage that runs throughout a transaction. I would say that the seller retains most of the leverage at the beginning of the process. When there are multiple offers on the table, it's not necessarily about the buyer trying to convince the seller to accept their offer as much as it is about a buyer being willing to overpay every other buyer and take more risk than every other buyer. What do I mean by that? Well, obviously overpaying means the seller's probably going to take the highest offer, right? Mm-hmm. Which means you as a buyer have to overpay every other buyer. But in this market, we're also adding in risk.
As is.
In that buyers are now taking homes as is, meaning they're not going to ask for that roof to be repaired. They're not going to ask for the pest work to be repaired. None of that kind of stuff, right? So where was I going with that, Andrew?
We won. Our methods work. We got the roof replaced.
That's true. That's where I was going on that. Probably not totally, but yes, we got the roof. So we had the leverage there. Oh, we were talking about leverage. So yeah. We had the leverage in that situation, right? I believe that leverage starts to change as we go into escrow. Because once we're into escrow, then all of those competing buyers are now gone. And, you know, having to go back to buyers after you tell them, sorry, you can't have the house, it's not so easy.
No.
I mean, I've heard folks say that before, like, well, we'll just go back. If they say no, we'll just go back to the other buyer. Well, not so easy, man. Like, you can't go and break up with somebody and then expect
ask for them back a couple ask for days them later. Back.
Like, and if you do, they're going to take advantage of you. Mm-hmm. They're going to be like, oh boy, they're in a tough spot.
Well, and if you want me, then you're going to have to do this, this, and this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so the leverage does absolutely transfer to a buyer. So now let's go back to these inspections. There's always going to be deficiencies to a house. I mean, we've sold houses that have been brand new and buyers have chosen to get inspections, something to find. Right? Mm-hmm. There's always something. There's always something. So would you rather present a buyer with those findings when they're competing with a bunch of people or when they have nothing to lose?
When they have nothing to lose. Just kidding. When they're in competition. So I think the biggest thing is it comes down to risk management, right?
Yes.
You know, in a competitive situation, you can probably assume as a buyer that you're not going to get the repairs done if you ask for them, right? You don't really have the leverage up front. But from a risk management standpoint, you know what you're getting into. You know, if you take a house as is without getting inspections and you find out, hey, your house needs a new foundation, $200,000, kind of a big deal. But if you got that up front, then maybe, you know, you just move on to the next house. This one wasn't meant to be. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the biggest takeaway here is risk management.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move on to next segment, favorite listing of the week. So we're going to do something fun with this, and we're going to have Nate keep track of this for us. So we wanted to give you our favorite listings of the week. Andrew's going to give you his favorite. I'm going to give you mine. And then we thought it would be fun for Andrew and I to guess what the ultimate
sales price.
The final sales price is. Mm-hmm. But as we were talking through this, we thought, you know what? It wouldn't be fair to potentially influence the market on these houses. And being that this is such a huge podcast, it's reaching, you know, so many folks out there. It's it's completely possible for us to influence the market. So we don't want to burn our fellow agents for that or with that. So we're going to choose these listings. We're going to let you know why we love them. Andrew and I are going to guess what it's going to be an educated guess, but we're going to guess what the final sales price is going to be. And then after these deals close, we'll come back and we'll see who was closest. And then we're going to do this throughout the season. And we're going to treat it like the golf game, because I'm a golfer, whoever has the lowest score at the end of the season.
So lowest differential.
Lowest differential, and we'll just keep track of it dollar for dollar, right? So if you're off by
if I really blow one by $100,000,
yeah, if you know. So that's, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
because that could happen. You could be off by $100,000. And actually, that's no, I'm not.
Seriously.
Yeah, I'm not coming down on them. That's the way this crazy market is right now. All right, so what's your first listing?
701 Donner Way in Woodland. This is going to be South Woodland, really great neighborhood, right next to, I believe it's Crawford Park. It's a four-bedroom, two-bath for $500,000. So you're thinking $500,000 sounds like a lot of money, but in today's market, $500,000 doesn't get you that far. And in this particular case, swimming pool, good size lot, remodeled kitchen, great neighborhood.
Yeah. I love this house. I think the price point at $500,000 is right in the meat of the order for Woodland. There's plenty of homes that are less. There's plenty of homes that are worth more. Mm-hmm. It's kind of towards the edge of town. So you will potentially have to deal with some agricultural stuff going on around you, but that's not necessarily
get a little dusty when the farmers are out there,
that kind of stuff. But, yeah, the house has really, really great bones. I've always enjoyed showing these homes. I think folks that see these homes really like them. I would just say it's a really, really wonderful house and it's worth taking a look at. What was the address again?
701 Donner Way in Woodland.
And keep in mind that these houses are going super fast. So we recognize that by the time that this hits the air, that house may not even be available. So anyway, what do you think the ultimate sales price is going to be on that?
Well, I can't really announce it here.
Oh, that's right.
But what do you guys think it's going to sell for?
That's even better. So you're going to email podcast at HigginsHomeSearch.com. That's podcast at HigginsHomeSearch.com. And you are going to give us what you think, and we will give a special prize. I was thinking about doing like a golf round with Andrew, or maybe a steak dinner with Andrew. Or
how about a lake day with Andrew? Oh, that you sounds like a lot of fun.
All right. So you could do lake day with Andrew, or you could do golf day with Jeremy. And if you're not a lake person, you're not a golf person, then we'll figure something out.
We'll take
out.
You out to dinner.
We got to figure that part out. We're not there yet. We'll ask Nate to help us out with that. All right, so my favorite listing comes from Davis, 523 G Street in Davis. This is in the core area of downtown Davis. So it is technically the core, but I would say it's like a block outside of the core.
Yeah, it's right across from the co-op, right?
Yeah, it's right across the street from the co-op, which is a cool little market. A lot of organic stuff, farm-to-table type of stuff. Yeah, cool little place. So this one is a three-bedroom with a possibility of four bedrooms, and it's got, just one bath, which kind of makes it unique. The reason for this is because this is a mixed-use location, and therefore it can be used for commercial purposes. So the home looks and feels like a home, but it certainly can be used as a commercial. It's zoned that way. Mm-hmm. And I brought this to the table today. Oh, it's 1,200 square feet, by the way, approximately. And it's listed for $865,000. So prices are a little different in Davis.
Holy moly.
Just a tad. 1,200 square feet.
For
$865,000. But the reason I like this is because I don't think that this house is going to have nearly the type of competition that your Donner is going to have, for instance.
Well, why is that?
The reason.
What's the biggest difference here?
Well, I think aside from the one bath, like that. That kind of is a little bit of a downer, but even one baths are selling like crazy right now. The real reason for this is that, unfortunately, because it's a mixed use, you cannot get a traditional conventional loan.
Bingo.
You have to pay cash for this or you have to use a commercial loan. So if you have a business and that business can get a commercial loan for this, you're good to go. If you can pay cash, then you're good to go. Again, you can certainly live in this. It's mixed use. You can live in this house if you want. So you're not going to get the competition because the financing is a little bit tricky on that.
Well, your buyer pool is going to be much, much smaller.
Yeah. And when buyer pool is smaller, then what does that equal?
Less competition.
Less competition equals lower price. So check it out. 523 G Street. And I know what I think the price is. And I'll tell you when it sells. This one may take a little bit longer to sell, actually. It's already been on the market for 20 days.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it'd be good for like a nail salon. You're a salon owner. You can live in it. Also do your salon business out of it. Right. That's yeah, that type totally of cool. deal. Yeah.
You're cool. a real estate agent. You could live in it and run your real estate business out of it.
You can totally do that.
Yeah. Why would we do that? It's going to be such an awesome office already.
Our office will be open. What? 6 weeks, 2 months.
Yeah, right around there.
People are dragging their feet. It's not us.
It's sick. Nate's putting a video podcasting room in the office too. It's going to look badass.
You're going to be hearing from us every day. You're going to be tired of us. You're going to see us so much.
Do you really want to do this every day?
Daily videos. That's what all the big YouTubers are doing. Daily content.
I have a thought. Let me get it to you immediately.
Yeah. Right.
But I mean, honestly, I joke, but in your business, to be able to get that information out as quickly as things are moving right now, a house just hits the market. A house just gets back on the market. You just get a new listing. You have something that you want to get out to somebody pretty quickly. This is going to enable you to do that in a way that people can get that right in their email or however they follow you.
And I just think it's cool. I mean, what real estate office has a video podcasting room built into their office? Come on, dude.
We're ahead of the game.
We are. All right, folks, we are coming to the end of the show. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the next episode. This has been a kind of a sensitive subject. A lot of agents in our area are talking about this. A lot of buyers are jumping out of the market at this point. They're getting burnt out. And they're bailing and they're saying, we're going to wait. And so we wanted to have an episode, or we're going to have an episode about, is that the right thing to do? Should you jump out of the market? Is it too hot to fight? You know, maybe not. I think you'll like our perspective on it. And, I think we're also going to, add in there a little bit about writing non-contingent offers. That's something that we're seeing a lot. Yeah.
Risk management comes down to it.
So a lot of folks are doing it. It's certainly being done against the advice of brokers. And yet, in my experience, I would say at least half of the homes that we're selling, we're receiving offers that are coming in with no contingencies at all. So
a lot of liability there, but we'll get into it.
I wish to talk about it. So that wraps it up. Northern California Real Estate Show. Thank you, Nate. Thank you, Andrew, and we look forward to seeing you on the next one. Take care, guys.
Cool.